Alex and Richard on Dubai Today, stepping in for Suzanne, who is on holiday this week and then has a rather special press trip that she'll be going on in just a couple of weeks' time.
Ooh, so I'm sure she'll tell us all about that when she comes back.
She will. She's actually trekking just now.
Yes, I heard she's in the Lake District, climbing hills and breathing in gallons of fresh air and having a thoroughly wonderful time.
She's looking great. She's looking fantastic.
Well, she did the marathon this year, and trained for that. And has
what?
Been, yeah, she did. She did the half marathon. In I think whenever it was January, February, and then she's been doing Keep Fit Dubai Summer, so she is. She's in fighting fit form, putting us all to shame, Alex.
I never knew that.
Yep, our very own Suzanne Radford, well missed today on her Today Show, but she'll be back in a couple of weeks, and yeah. I think you're covering for her pretty much until she returns, yeah?
Yeah, I think I've got 5 weeks of on-air.
There you go. You're going to have to start going to bed a bit earlier, Alex.
I know, learn to go to bed. I'll try. So we're talking about interesting facts. Thank you very much for your text messages. Did you know that the Congo River is the only one that crosses the equator twice? Mm. It's the only one in the world. But we were also talking about some amazing stories of how to overcome things in your life.
Yeah, it's sort of those stories when it's against all odds, and stories of survival and you know, getting through utter adversity. And there's a couple here that I found, and a chap called Stephen Callahan, a sailor, and on the night of January the 29th, 1982, Stephen set sail alone in his small sailboat from the Canary Islands, bound for the Caribbean. On February 5th, the ship sank in a storm, leaving Callahan adrift on the Atlantic in a 5 by 5 foot inflatable rubber raft. Naked except for a t-shirt, with only 3 pounds of food, a few pieces of gear, and 8 pints of water to survive. Callahan drifted for 76 days and over 1,800 miles on the open ocean before he reached land and was rescued in the Bahamas.
Wow.
I mean, it's one of those things. I mean, 76 days in a life raft at sea, what you must go through when you're having to, you know, self-preserve, really, rationing your own food, you know, it is just extraordinary.
And how do you do that, really, having no idea of your the time, the limit?
Well, you don't. I mean, I suppose that's one of these things. You just, you just have to take each day as it comes. But these sort of stories are remarkable, and you know, we're calling them against all odds. There's the other story here, which I'm sure you may be aware of. I think it's been turned into a big blockbuster movie now, but in March 2003, Aaron Ralston was hiking in the Blue John Canyon in Utah.
Into the Wild.
That's another movie, Into the Wild. That was the one that was directed, and it was about the guy who
somebody will tell us. 400. I know which one you mean. Yeah.
Anyway, this is a true story. And while he was descending a slot canyon, a suspended boulder from which he was climbing became dislodged, crushing his right hand and forearm and pinning it against the canyon wall. After spending 5 days trying to free his arm from the 800-pound load and surviving on just 350 mils of water, he took the very difficult decision of amputating his own arm. Using a dull 2-inch knife, the operation took about an hour. He then miraculously hiked out of the canyon.
Do you know what? When you think about that, you can't quite comprehend it, can you?
No.
I mean, even the fact that you're in that position, there must be a load of things that go through your mind. I have heard of somebody before who amputated their leg from the knee down, who was trapped under, I believe it was a tractor or something, and they were somewhere that nobody was going to get to them. But can you imagine what would go through your mind? I mean, 5 days is just, it's almost uncomprehendable. And then to think about actually taking the position of, because I think by that point your feeling would pretty much be gone in your arm. You would hope. And so the cutting it off isn't actually the bit that I think is the worst. The worst bit is thinking, to cut your arm off, what if you, I mean, how does an artery, how do you not bleed out?
Well, I think, again, it was that or nothing, you know. I mean, if he hadn't have made that very brave decision and you know, quite an extraordinary decision to cut his own arm off with essentially a penknife, he would have perished. So again, it's when, as human beings, we're put in these sort of extraordinary situations, you know, we find strength and things from within that we never probably knew we possessed. I mean, I've heard stories about, you know, mums whose children have been in a car crash and they've been able to lift the car. You know, these huge strengths come from these desperate situations, against all odds.
See, this, I suppose there's the other, I mean, there are some famous stories if you think about the race to the North Pole. Scott and his team, I mean, they turned around, but they were only, I think it was 11 miles or 11 kilometres from actually reaching camp. So it was such a, you know, there was so many things that hindered them. And it could have been this great success story.
But you have to remember, I mean, it's still a feat in this day and age to sort of cross the Arctics and do these adventures. But these days we have, clothing which is of the highest quality that will keep them warm. We have satellite navigations, we have aids. In those days they did it with nothing, you know, fur coats and a snow stick. You know, it's
they
incredible.
Even I remember they picked up some Siberian horses thinking that was going to benefit them over having a load of dogs for sleds, but unfortunately it was just too cold for the ponies as well, which was you know, dreadful to think about. Yeah. Have you ever thought about doing anything like that? You know, like a great achievement for yourself?
Well, I've always wanted to cross the Atlantic in a sailboat. That's something I probably will do. A few years ago, about 7 years ago, I wanted to do some extreme skiing, can you believe? And so I went on a course in Canada to Whistler and became a level 3 ski instructor there and took an off-piste course.
Wow.
So I did for a couple of years do these sort of extreme heli skiing and sort of deep snow skiing and that sort of thing, which was always an ambition of mine. And sort of, I was in my early 30s and I thought, if I don't do it now, I never will. So I literally did take the plunge and go off and do something that I've always dreamt of. So I've done that. So maybe in a couple of years you'll see me on a boat on the Atlantic, I don't know. But I do like to sort of have these sort of extraordinary things that are achievable, you know. I mean, I'm not going to go and do anything crazy. It's something that is achievable, but it is something that you know, will be an experience for life.
I'd really like to do a skydive, and I just cannot believe that I've not.
It's so easy here in Dubai. There's a skydive down in the marina. You could go down this afternoon. You could be in the plane at 3 o'clock.
I'd really like to do. I do a lot of. I'm on the search and rescue team for the Desert Challenge.
Okay.
So I spend a lot of time hanging out of helicopters, and I often sort of. I'm so sort of comfortable about it that I think, oh, I wish I could jump out of this just now.
Well, do the training first.
Yeah, perhaps. Yeah.
Don't just get the urge when you're next flying above the desert.
Yeah. It's funny, actually, because I'm not overly keen on planes, but helicopters I'm quite comfortable with.
Well, I don't know if we have time for a story, but I was once in a near miss in a helicopter. Maybe I'll save that for next. I'll save that for next week, shall I?
Tell me.
No, I was flying out of Vancouver and I was flying up to Whistler. It was funny enough when I was doing the ski instructor's course, and we took off from Vancouver Airport in the helicopter, flying over Horseshoe Bay, and I thought, this is a bit strange. The helicopter's not getting any height, and I looked down and there was nowhere to land. I mean, it was just the Rocky Mountains, British Columbia, and below freezing water. This was actually, ironically, New Year's Eve. And eventually the helicopter pilot turned round and he said, I'm terribly sorry, but we're going to have to return to Vancouver International Airport. We've lost our oil pressure. So, of course, you think, well, this could be it. We're going to go down. Behind me in the helicopter was three guys going snowboarding from Los Angeles, who, of course, became very dramatic and going, if we're going to die, man, you're the one I'd want to die with. And I was sat there just going, oh, my gosh. And we had nothing, no idea what was going on. The chopper was sort of bumping and whatever. And they said, we'll be landing on the main runway of Vancouver International Airport. Sort of brace yourselves. And we came into to Vancouver, and I thought, this is all wrong. We're coming in far, far too quickly. But what, of course, I didn't realize is that in those emergencies, in the bigger helicopters, they land them like a plane. Mm. So they actually have wheels on. So the pilot landed the thing like a plane. And of course, we had the fire engines rushing down and everything else, and it was fine. There was a secondary engine or whatever on the chopper. But we brought in. I saw the big puddle of oil on the floor. I got off the helicopter. I switched my mobile back on, and of course it was 8 hours difference, and it was New Year's Eve in the UK, so all this "Happy New Year, Rich! Have a great year ahead!" started coming in as I sort of clambered out of this.
I thought you meant you'd had a near miss with another aircraft. I've also had an emergency landing, just in the middle of nowhere, and an engine failure. And yeah, as you say, lucky that there's two. But I remember I didn't even have a seat. I was not even actually sitting on a seat. And I remember holding my phone thinking, at what point do you start to text home going, "I love you"?
Yes,
I just, fortunately, I kept leaving it because I don't think my mother would have been too happy if I'd scared the living.
No, but it is one of those things, you know, when you have, I'm sure we've all had similar experiences of whether it be a car accident or an illness, or it makes you think about life in a different way, and you do stop and think, and you do a few what ifs and take a deep breath, and after those things, life seems a bit of a better place.
And there's some sort of things, like I said, planes. I considering I was in the Royal Air Force, so I like aircraft. And now the more and more time I spend on planes, just I think it's because we don't move around on aircraft.
I'm the same. I think the more air flight I do, the more I sort of start panicking a bit about it, but you start thinking about it more. My ex-girlfriend was absolutely terrified of flying. She hated it, and I'd never had a problem, but her fear made me sort of scared, and she'd be going, "What's that noise?" And in the end I'd be going, "Actually, what is that noise?" You know,
but it's the air hostess is chatting, they won't shut up.
Yes, but I think it is still statistically the safest form of travel, so don't let us put you off getting on your aeroplanes for your summer vacations.
And we're talking about this just as everybody's leaving.
Yes.
Yeah, and there are a lot of people leaving this summer.
Well, you know, there's like we said, there's the Olympics on back home in the UK for the British expats, and you know, I think more people do stay than they used to in Dubai. I mean, I think, you know, I was coming up to the studio this morning and the roads were jammed.
Really?
And I thought, this is strange. Normally this time of the year it eases off a bit. But
yesterday I find it very quiet, but perhaps not so much today.
There you go.
Yes. One quick one?
One quick random fact to leave the show with. I've learned a lot today, Alex. And here's somebody who learned from a very young age. At just 4 years old, Mozart was able to learn a piece of music in half an hour.
Yeah, genius.
He was a genius.
Yeah, absolute genius. Thank you so much for joining me today. You'll be in with us again next week?
I'm hoping so, yes.
Great, that sounds good. And you're going to have some loads more interesting topics and facts.
We'll have a think in the week and come up with something fun.